Well, I welcome you to another study from the book of Esther. And let's begin, as we always do, with our memory passages. Our two passages we're using right now are from Daniel 3, 17 and 18. If that is the case, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up. And then Daniel 6 and verse 10. Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home, and in his upper room with his windows open toward Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees three times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as was his custom since early days. Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, these men showed us how to live in the midst of ungodly times, in an environment that was not always receptive toward them, a difficult time. We can really learn so much from them. Well, now as we're in the book of Esther, we're going to be picking up in chapter 6. But I've noted already, and I want to just remind you, the book of Esther is one of those that it's just fascinating reading. It's a great story. There's drama. There's, in the story of Haman, as we're going to be looking at today, there's almost humor in the way that he talks about what he would do for the one that was to be honored. It's a fascinating book. But it's really so much more than that. The book never mentions God. It never mentions Yahweh. It never has a reference to the Lord. And yet, I believe that one of the key reasons this book is here is to show us how God works in providence. He doesn't always use miracles to accomplish his things. And thinking about the people of this book, they are people who are still in the lands of captivity, at least. They'd all been given permission to go home, but they were scattered. The Lord is God of all the earth. And it didn't matter if you were in Shushan or Jerusalem. The Lord was still your God and looking out for you. I pointed out, number one, that when the story begins in chapter 6, or it picks back up in chapter 6, it is about 474 B.C. It's 9 or 10 years since the book of Esther opened. And here is Esther, also known as Hadassah, a Jewish woman who was among those who had not gone back to Jerusalem. When Cyrus issued the decree allowing them to return, you know, her family had not gone back. But now she has become the queen, and it's going to be her job to seek to save her people. We'll quickly review those events in just a moment. But one of the things I want to encourage you to look at as you read the book of Esther, and it is one of those that you can sit down, if you'll take a little time, and read from beginning to end without interruption. Pay attention to how often the writer uses the theme of reversal, that he flips things. The book, and sometimes that's used to mark the beginning and end of a section of the book, but the book opens with the great banquet and the great feasting and rejoicing by the Persians. At the end of the book, we have the Jews celebrating with the Feast of Purim. They are feasting. We will see Mordecai in sackcloth, and then Mordecai is in royal apparel. Mordecai is hated by Haman, and Haman prepares gallows. What happens? Haman, in the reversal, gets hanged on the gallows. He is chosen for Mordecai. There are a number of these things you'll see throughout the book. I may point out some, but just watch for how the writer uses that device that, you know, it helps get our attention. It focuses on God's working, that he can reverse the fortunes of those who are proud and haughty. He can reverse the fortunes of those who put their faith and trust in him. As I mentioned, in the first chapter, it opens with this great celebration. The key event as far as our interest and the way the development of the storyline is the king sent for his queen Vashti. She refused to come in. It angered the king, and at the suggestion of some of his men, he puts her away from being queen, sends out a decree and says, "You ladies better listen to your husbands." And then a few years pass, and the king is going to have another queen. And young virgins are sought throughout the land. They go through a special time of preparation. It took a year to get them ready for their big night with the king. And one of those that was chosen was Esther, a young Jewish orphan, brought up by her first cousin, Mordecai. He obviously was older than her and was as a father to her. And he told her, he said, "You don't reveal that you're a Jew. Keep that secret." Obviously, there would have been some prejudice against that. Well, Esther becomes the queen. And then at the end of chapter 2, a key event takes place. Mordecai is now sitting in the king's gate. It would seem that he has some position within that government, and he learns of a plot against the king. He gets the word to Esther. Esther tells the king in, you know, Mordecai's name about the plot. These two men are executed. And then it was kind of forgotten, but it'll come back up. But in the third chapter, remember that Haman, who is one of the king's right-hand men, who gets promoted and seated above all the princes. And the king says that everybody's to bow and pay homage to Haman. But Mordecai refused to do that. We're not told exactly why. It may have had to do with him believing it would be in violation of God's law. But what we know with certainty is it so enraged Haman that he wanted Mordecai to die. He didn't just want Mordecai to die. He wanted his entire race of people to die. And so he goes to the king and he tells the king, there is a certain people. Take note in verse 8, he doesn't say the Jews. He just says there's a certain people that they don't obey the king's laws. We need to be rid of them. And I will make certain that the treasury is enriched if you give permission. Now they had cast the lot. The lot was called Pur. They had cast lot and it was going to be 11 months later. And the king, it would appear, without asking a lot of questions, without getting any details, says, "Sure, Haman, here's my signet ring. You give the order." It goes out and it just caused great grief among the Jews. In chapter 4, Mordecai is in the sackcloth. He's wailing. And you remember that Esther sent some clothes to him. Said, "You know, has somebody carry them to him? You can't be going around like that." And he sent back a copy of the decree. And at first, Esther was reluctant. She said, "You don't just go uninvited into the king. You can be put to death. I haven't been invited in for 30 days. And Mordecai says, "Look, you keep silent. Deliverance will arise, but you yourself can expect to be lost." And then Esther summoned her faith and courage, and she said, "I will go to the king. If I perish, I perish. I will do what I am supposed to do." Mordecai had challenged her that maybe this is why you have become queen. and she steps up to the task. In the fifth chapter, she went to the king, knowing that if he didn't hold the golden scepter out, she would be put to death. But he held it out. He welcomed her, you know, promised her that he would give her up to half the kingdom. And she said, well, what I'd like for you to do is you and Haman come to a banquet I've prepared. So they went to the banquet. And she said, my request is come to a second banquet and then I'll tell you all about it. Well, Haman goes out of this feeling really good about himself. Haman leaves this first banquet knowing he's invited to a second one. I mean, here he is. He's promoted above all these others. He is getting to dine with the king and the queen. But he sees Mordecai and it just ruined his day. And he's telling his wife and his friends about it. And they said, well, why don't you have these gallows built? And you go to the king and you just ask if you can't put Mordecai to death. So he had the gallows made and he was planning to do that. Well, meanwhile, and that brings us to where we left off in chapter 6, the king could not sleep. Now, think about this. Why couldn't he sleep? Was he concerned about the affairs of state? Was he wondering what Esther was going to ask at the next banquet? I don't know. You know, maybe he drank too much coffee. What I'm convinced of, it was in God's providence that he couldn't sleep that night. And he asked that the official chronicles, the records of the kingdom be brought to him and read to him. And, you know, this probably went on for some time because it would appear that he gets to the good part about the time morning is coming. But in the reading of this, they come across the place where it was recorded that Mordecai had foiled a plot on his life, two of the doorkeepers, Bigthana and Teresh. And there was probably something, as he was reading the records, it didn't mention the great reward. And he asked, well, what was done for Mordecai? What kind of honor and dignity was bestowed on this man who saved my life? And they said, well, nothing's been done for him. Well, the king wants to rectify that wrong. And evidently, I don't know if he heard someone in the court or he just asked the question, but he said, who's in the court? And somebody said, well, Haman has just entered. Now, Haman had just walked in with the idea of, I'm going to ask the king for permission to kill Mordecai and hang him on those gallows. You may recall we pointed out that it's pretty clear from the records and pictures of the Persians that they didn't hang by the neck on gallows as we would have seen done, you know, especially in some of the old Westerns. But they would kill someone and then impale their body upon a wooden gallows post, some type of thing. Well, that's what he's come to do. And then this is the part that it's almost comical. As the king has them, says, bring Haman in here. And he says, Haman, what shall be done for the man whom the king delights to honor? Well, Haman, being a proud man, thinks, well, who could he be wanting to honor except me? And so he really pours it on. And he says, well, if the king really wants to honor somebody, now think about, you know, Haman's, he can't ask for, suggest a promotion because he's got the highest job in the land, except for the king. He said, get a royal robe for him, one that the king himself has worn, and take a horse that the king has ridden on, and that has the royal crest on its head. And you give this horse and this robe to one of the king's most noble princes. and let this prince array the man, and parade him through the city on the king's horse, and let one go before him saying, thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delights to honor. Now, you just have to picture Haman as he's saying all these things to the king, thinking about how wonderful it's going to be riding through the city of Shushan on the king's horse and having it proclaimed that this is the man the king wants to honor. And imagine what he felt when the king says, hurry, take the robe and the horse as you have suggested, and do so for Mordecai the Jew who sits within the king's gate. Leave nothing undone of all that you have spoken. Now, the main thing I would point out here is just, again, picture Haman. He is coming there to ask for permission to kill Mordecai, to hang him up on public display, and instead, in quite the reversal, he is going to make a public display of Mordecai, and he's going to have to be the one that honors Mordecai. But there is something else to take note of here. The king calls him Mordecai the Jew. The king who has issued a decree, or the decree has been issued in his name, that the Jews are to be killed, annihilated, and destroyed throughout his empire. I believe the king Ahasuerus was completely oblivious. He was told of certain people, and he just, oh, you take care of it. He didn't realize that it would be men like Mordecai. He just knew that he trusted Haman at that point to do that. Well, Haman did his job. He went through the city giving honor to Mordecai. And then, verse 12, he goes back to his house. Notice the hurry. The king says, hurry, take the robe. Now, Haman hurries back to his house, verse 12. He's mourning. He's got his head covered. And he told his wife and his friends what had happened. And in one of the things that there is no certain explanation of, they said to him in verse 13, if Mordecai, before whom you have begun to fall, is of Jewish descent, you will not prevail against him, but will surely fall before him. Well, now, he had previously said to them, verse 13 of the fifth chapter, as long as I see Mordecai the Jew. This should not be the first time they've learned that Mordecai is a Jew, and they had suggested having the gallows built. I don't know why the sudden change, except perhaps, and I'll just offer a possible, is when they hear this happen, maybe it triggers in their mind some thoughts, and they remember from their history their great King Cyrus, who had given orders that the Jews be allowed to go back, that their King Darius had reaffirmed the orders of Cyrus that the Jews be allowed to build their temple, and it honored them. Perhaps they knew about Daniel, who didn't just serve under the Babylonians, but Daniel the Jew had served under the new Persian Empire for at least a time. He would have been quite aged by then, but it was under the Persian rule that he was cast into the lion's den and survived. I don't know. If maybe some of these things came to their mind, whatever the case, they said, you're in trouble. And then, while they were still talking to him, notice what happens. The king's eunuchs came and hastened to to bring Haman to the banquet which Esther had prepared. Things are moving. Hurry and honor Mordecai. He hurries home. Now they hasten, they hurry to bring him to this banquet. And so he's at the second banquet. And the king again, Queen Esther, what is it that you want? I will give you up to half the kingdom. You know, obviously this is hyperbole, but he's saying, you know, she had worried and told Mordecai, I'm risking my life to go in. It is obvious he cares for her. And he says, I'll give you half the kingdom. And so she begins, verse 3. If I have found favor in your sight, O king, and if it pleases my king. She starts off very kindly. And watch how she words this, avoids blaming the king. Let my life be given to me at my petition and my people at my request. For we have been sold, my people and I, to be destroyed, to be killed, and to be annihilated. Had we been sold as male and female slaves, I would have held my tongue, although the enemy could never compensate for the king's loss. She says to her husband, she said, you've got to intervene and save me and my people. Now, this banquet, you've got the king and you've got Haman. The king is puzzled by what she's saying. You know, one, I don't believe he realizes that she is a Jewess. But he knew Mordecai was a Jew, and he honored him that very day. I don't think he realizes, exactly what he had given orders to do. Esther doesn't say the Jews, but the words she uses are taken from that writing that Haman had done. To be destroyed, to be killed, to be annihilated. Those were the words in that decree that Haman had authored and sent out through the empire. And he had to know. But the king is just befuddled by this. And he says, who is he? And where is he who would dare presume in his heart to do such a thing? And just picture this as Esther says, the adversary and enemy is this wicked Haman. Now, just the three of them there for this banquet. Not to say there may not have been some servants around, but the three people dining together. She said, it's him. And the king was so angry that he got up, he went out into the palace garden. Did he go out into the palace garden in order to think about what his next move was going to be? Did he go into the palace garden to summon the executioners? I don't know what exactly he got up and went out for. My supposition would be that he's just so angry that he's got to have a second to clear his head. And while he is gone, Haman is pleading for his life, pleading with Queen Esther. And when the king comes back, verse 8, it says that Haman had fallen across the couch where Esther was. I ran across something that was really amusing to me, at least. Something referred to as the Targums, Aramaic paraphrases of the Old Testament. They're not a translation, but they're a paraphrase with some additions. And some. They said the angel Gabriel gave him a shove. That's what made him fall across the couch, was the angel Gabriel. And I found that kind of humorous because it does set up. Haman probably was going to lose his life anyway, but his fate was sealed when the king came back in. And there he is laying across the couch that his wife was reclining on. And he said, is he going to assault the queen while I'm right here? And by assault, there is some ambiguity in that word. That word can just mean to do physical harm. It can be used in a sexual sense. And I don't know for sure what he had in mind. But Haman's fate was sealed. Probably he was a dead man anyway. But when he had fallen across the couch where the queen lay, you don't go and approach the queen. You don't come. You keep your respectful distance from the king's wife. His fate was sealed. They covered his head, or his face, it says in verse 8. And then one of the eunuchs, a man named Harbona, said, well, look, there are the gallows that he has made, and he made them for Mordecai, the man who spoke good on the king's behalf. The king didn't know anything about these gallows and Haman's plot against Mordecai and all this, but it was known to others. And they said, let's hang him there. And the king said, great, hang him on it. So Haman was put to death. His body was hanged on these gallows. You know, it has to remind one. Well, a New Testament passage would be Galatians 6, we reap as we sow. But the book of Proverbs in the 26th chapter, verse 27 says, whoever digs a pit will fall into it, and he who rolls a stone will have it roll back on him. Haman dug a pit, but he was the one that fell into it. I want to stop there, and in our next class, we'll finish up the book of Esther, but some lessons to take from this. I keep coming back to it. I'm going to say it again and again. The providence of God. And you just think about how in this lesson, God used a sleepless night. God used, think about what should have happened. Mordecai should have been rewarded back when he saved the king's life. But look how it worked out that they failed to reward him when they should have. And think about the chronicles of the king had to have been pretty large. But they read the right portion that night. God can work in our lives for our good in so many ways. Have faith in Him. And then a second thing, thinking about Haman, really the last of these all are taken from him, put away hatred and bitterness. Haman had this great position in the kingdom, and he allowed Mordecai to take away his happiness. Hatred and bitterness will do that to us. Hatred and bitterness will rob us of the ability to enjoy what we do have. Don't be like him. And Haman also, not only was he hate-filled and bitter, so much of that came out of the fact that he was so proud, so filled with pride. Humble yourself. We will not find ourselves nearly so easily offended if we are humble. When we are filled with pride, then everything seems an insult to us. Anybody that's not bowing to us is insulting us. Humble yourself. And truly, we do reap what we sow. Haman prepared the gallows for himself. Let's learn from these things.